In person, please sign up at the sign-up sheet at the back of the room. Second, for virtual attendees, raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise hand button on the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called and your microphone will be unmuted. Third, call-in attendees, you can signal by pressing *9 on the keypad. This, your last four digits of the phone number will be then called and you will be connected. You may need to dial *6 to unmute your phone. Fourth, written communications and testimony can be submitted to the staff and emailed to awatson@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. on the day prior to the meeting. Please include the date of the meeting in the comments section and what the comments are made for, your name and the agenda item and subject you're addressing. Submitted comments will be entered into the record at this time. For all speakers, please state your name, general area that you live in. Comments are normally limited to 3 minutes in a public hearing. I need a motion to adopt the agenda.
Move to adopt agenda as presented.
Second.
Discussion? Hearing none, the agenda is admitted as presented. This starts the public hearing for the Planning Commission on the Comprehensive Plan Update 2024. Mr. Baker?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Eric Baker. I'm with the Kitsap County Commissioner's Office. Tonight is the public hearing for the Planning Commission, before the Comprehensive Plan before the Planning Commission. One moment, let me share my screen. I have pared this presentation down, which works well in a couple instances. One, I'm really feeling under the weather, and two, everybody has heard this a million times. Okay, I think we're up and running. So tonight is the most important thing is not to hear me talk. It is to hear the folks who are in the audience and the people who are available on Zoom to talk about the comprehensive plan. Back in August 30th of this year, we released new draft planning documents. There are four in all, the first of which is the comprehensive plan. That is your goals, policies, and strategies, what you want to be when you grow up, and how you're going to get there. The final environmental impact statement, that is a review of adverse environmental impacts that comes from your comprehensive plan. How are you going to grow? How are those people people who are working here and living here, how are they going to be able to get around on our roadways? How are they going to affect the environment, wetlands, streams, and things like that? The capital facilities plan, this is your infrastructure. What does it take for people to be able to turn on their taps and flush their toilets? And what kind of facility needs are necessary? Families moving to this area are going to need schools. Fire is going to need to be made available for folks who are in either a medical emergency or having fires. It is those types of services that need to be calculated to ensure that we are going to be able to pay for these services. A lot of the capital facilities are not necessarily county facilities. Obviously, fires and schools would be examples. We work very closely with our special purpose districts on calculating the potential impacts, again, over the 20-year horizon. This is a plan from 2024 to 2044. Then the last document is development regulations. These are requirements for future development. If you want to become something in the future, the development regulations are how you go about achieving that in regards to new construction, redevelopment, etc. Some of the things that are not necessary that are in this document that have been discussed at length, the previous board direction on the preferred alternative is that there were not going to be any rural-to-rural reclassifications, including the large Rainier request up in North Kitsap. These are all being moved to a 2025 process that is going to focus largely on rural issues. Our urban growth area boundaries, they're to remain largely the same. There are a very small number of urban growth area expansions largely related to industrial uses and city requests. This means we're going to focus on the development of existing land over the next 20-year period. This is land that has been inside an urban growth area boundary since at least 2016. We want to utilize a combination of incentives and regulatory reform to increase densities and heights in new and existing neighborhoods. I'm going to talk a little bit about housing diversity. One of those key components is to ensure that we are creating opportunities for people to build higher and to build denser, to utilize our existing infrastructure, our existing road system, our existing sewer pipes that is best for the cost of housing, but it's also best for the taxpayer, who ultimately is going to be responsible for maintaining all that infrastructure when it comes time. A large chunk of our existing infrastructure is reaching that period right now. Installed by developers in the 80s and 90s, now needing to be renovated or improved, that cost comes on the sewer rate or the ratepayer or the taxpayer, which is why this is so important. These are the foundations of the preferred alternative, and they were all reflected in the draft documents. This would include zoning maps, the policies, and the code. There are three main change initiatives that this update focused on, the first of which is housing, how to increase housing diversity. Kitsap County is very single-family, detached housing-driven. That type of housing is grossly outside the ability for people to buy or rent if you're making a certain amount of annual median income. We need to be able to incentivize different housing types, townhomes, multifamily. And a lot of what you're going to see in this update is really focusing its energies on how to make that a viable product in Kitsap County. Climate change. With 271 miles of shoreline and multiple floodplains, climate change could hit Kitsap County particularly hard, especially as it comes to sea level rise, saltwater intrusion, and other resiliency issues. We have roadways. We have sewer plants. We have sewer pump stations, all of which are located near waterways, near floodplains. We need to begin to address how we are going to make our infrastructure more resilient. That isn't just addressing the effects of climate change. That is ensuring the health and long-term viability of a lot of our existing infrastructure that our citizens today, not just new growth, will be requiring moving into the next 20 years. And then vital regional and countywide centers. This is how we are going to turn areas like downtown Silverdale into 24/7 communities, not driving in at 8 in the morning and driving out at 6 at night. We want people to be able to work, play, and live all in the same area and to be able to do so without having to get in a single passenger vehicle and, more than that, park that single passenger vehicle, which takes up very valuable land that could be utilized for so many other public benefits. One of the things that we did focus on was housing need. We received a new direction from the Department of Commerce about how jurisdictions have to plan for housing. No longer is it just planning for people. It is now planning for housing of differing income bands. So you need to be able to provide adequate housing for people making 100% of annual median income, 80%, 50%, all the way down to 30%, and also deal with emergency housing needs. Those have established set numbers that when the county compared the required multifamily housing, which largely Commerce indicates in our community is about what people making 80% or less of annual median income need to be able to rent or own, we only had 2,000 units of that over the next 20-year period. The housing need provided by the Department of Commerce suggested we need closer to 8,300 units. That would be almost four times as many as we had in our current zoning. That required us to focus heavily on our multifamily zones, especially in places like Silverdale, Kingston, and the McWilliams area, to intensify development and, again, to build higher and to build denser. One thing I do want to highlight is that also there is a small amount of single-family attached housing, like townhomes, that are allowed in single-family zones. When I talk about growth, I'm not just talking about opportunities in new subdivisions or new high-rises. I'm talking about opportunities on vacant land within existing neighborhoods. That vacant lot may not necessarily become a single-family residence anymore. It could potentially be a triplex. It is being able to, again, leverage existing infrastructure, but also be able to create densities that can fuel transit, one of the key components to all of these. So what you're going to see here in the preferred alternative is we come relatively close to the 8,300 units. Why do we only come somewhat close? Because that adding that many housing units to our existing urban growth areas creates a huge population increase, which I'll show a little bit more in a bit. But we are planning for more people than our population allocation due to the fact that we needed to generate almost 6,000, I guess in this case, about 5,000 more single-family units, or I'm sorry, more multifamily units than we had currently. So in housing diversity, how are we going about doing this? It isn't just a matter of plan it and they will come. We are working on ensuring that Kitsap County is playing its role, removing barriers, removing obstacles to people thinking differently about their land, thinking about, okay, maybe I don't just build a single family home here. Maybe I build that triplex. Maybe I don't just build a new Jimmy John's in this area. Maybe I have a Jimmy John's with three stories of residential above it. It's how to make the owners think differently about their property when they're either developing or redeveloping. Incentives such as improved permit processing for multifamily housing and the foundations of a tax exemption process for affordable housing are two things that are hallmarks of this code. Additionally, we have regulatory revisions to allow the increased densities and heights, reduced lot sizes, lot dimensions, and parking requirements to provide a more efficient use of land. Don't take up as much land in parking lots. Allow them to be utilized for parks, housing, and other community amenities. And then lastly, promotion of accessory dwelling units in urban areas. We're allowing up to two of these per lot, and we are reducing regulatory burden and impact fees for these to get folks to turn their the area above their garage into a potential housing unit, to put a shed, turn their she shed in the back into a housing unit. These are the types of things that folks making 80% or lower of annual median income, especially those making 50% or less, are more apt to be able to rent. Climate change. We're establishing goals for greenhouse gas emission reductions. We are really trying to focus on three things. We're trying to focus on the built environment, the natural environment, but also our transportation system. Those are the three main sources of greenhouse gas emissions in our community. I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing on each one of those, but then, like I mentioned before, we also need to address resiliency, which is a fancy planner speak, to make sure that what you have today will still be here tomorrow if substantial climate change factors work their way in. This also includes wildfires. Kitsap County is a heavily forested community, and a lot of potential wildfire risk exists, especially in our rural areas. So some of the things we're doing on climate change, we have established what's called a C-PACER program, which is a potential financial instrument for people who are doing green building to get financing incentives from local banks. Tree canopy and credit in the critical areas ordinance. We're increasing trees in urban development through enhanced environmental protections and a potential tree canopy code that requires trees to be included with all new development to varying degrees. Then the resilience and watershed planning. That isn't just worried about our infrastructure. That's also how we go about acquiring land that is necessary to renovate floodplains, restore creeks that have been previously tightlined, to not just provide for the infrastructure, but also provide for habitat and our shorelines. So we also want to impact our countywide centers. There are three of those, like I mentioned before, Silverdale, then the Kingston and McWilliams areas. The regional centers are intended to be the place with the most density, the highest buildings. I'll talk a little bit about Silverdale, the types of heights that are allowed in the new code that's being proposed. Then the countywide centers, less degree of development, but again, really trying to take and focus on redevelopment of areas like in Kingston, the area around the existing grocery store, and on McWilliams, that area around the 303 corridor. how to turn a number of those from, again, just single-story commercial or residential housing to something more, something that can provide a greater number of housing units or a greater amount of economic development. So most of everything that I've talked about is about redevelopment. Kitsap County has largely been built on what planners tend to call greenfield development. That is the development of vacant land that is oftentimes on the fringes of the urban growth area. That land at times can be cheaper and easier to develop than redevelopment. However, there is benefits from redevelopment, such as utilizing existing infrastructure. But a lot of the focus is going to be on how do we redevelop existing parking areas, existing buildings that are starting to reach their redevelopment horizons. Their buildings are getting to a particular age. Their parking lots are not being utilized as much as before. How could they potentially reuse that land? We're focusing on multifamily development, both mixed use and standard apartment and condominium complexes. Higher density for row housing, apartments, and condominiums. When I talk about development in existing neighborhoods, our urban low zones, which are single family zones, for attached housing are going to allow a density bonus. Instead of being capped at 9 dwelling units an acre, they would be able to go to 14 dwelling units an acre. This is particularly helpful for lots that are impaired by critical areas or other factors. It does allow a developer to recapture a certain number of those units in a smaller area. But that is site-specific. That does not happen all the time, but that is one of the benefits of potentially allowing it to be easier to do higher densities in single-family zones. A lot of 3 to 5-story buildings in a lot of communities. Again, in Silverdale, we're going much higher than that. And we want to build near services and transit. Everything I'm talking about here over the next 20 years is going to require us to expand our transit infrastructure, which for us means buses and ferries. That can be buses around our communities. That could be new ferry routes from Silverdale to Bremerton to be able to take the pressure off some of our highways and to be able to get, again, people out of their single-passenger vehicles and to be able to commute in different ways. When I talk about transit, I also am talking about bicycling and walkability. Whoops, that was not the next slide. I did not do that quite right. Here I'm going to talk about the Silverdale Center. To be a little more specific, I didn't want to barrage you with a bunch of numbers. The Silverdale Center is that area in blue. It includes everything from Old Town pretty much up to the edge of the highway loop and over to the St. Michael's Medical Center and the new transit center. We are looking at dramatically increasing the number of units that are allowed. Currently, for an example, in the regional center zone, which is pretty much the area around the mall, you are capped at 30 dwelling units an acre. That is not a substantial amount when you're talking about urban development. The new code actually moves, instead of from 10 to 30, it's now 19 to no maximum density. You're now capped by how high you're building your structure. That will help provide opportunities for people to build smaller units, not necessarily have to have all the same size, and to be able to maximize the use of what is a limited amount of land, whether you're talking about greenfield or redevelopment in that center. Additionally, the density ranges and heights are going up. There are portions of Silverdale that allow, with certain additional amenities, up to 125 feet. That would be the area around the hospital. Others could cap out at 85 feet. Obviously, these are some pretty substantial heights compared to what you see in Silverdale today. But again, this is the land that has the potential for redevelopment over time and is consistent with our regional and countywide planning policies. Here's the walkability, bikeability I had mentioned before. When you're talking about Silverdale, we have a series of, again, planner speak, super blocks. Those are blocks that are a quarter mile in length before you can go east-west. We need to be able to break those up to be able to provide more opportunities for people to walk and bicycle around a community without spending all their time on Silverdale Way, Buckland Hill, or Ridgetop Boulevard. These need to include pedestrian bicycle facilities. Likely, it also will require at some point a non-motorized crossing over Clear Creek beyond what we have on our existing highways, our existing road system. Our existing road systems are going to need to be improved, but they're going to need to be improved for vehicles and buses. Being able to fit bicycles and pedestrians in there at the levels that we probably will need may not be practical. We may need to be thinking about another crossing of Clear Creek over time. And a lot of this is to be included with redevelopment. This isn't all about infrastructure being constructed by public funding sources. It is about also allowing private development to pay a portion of these improvements over time. But that all goes back to how do you make a project pencil? How do you make a project attractive? And that's something that needs to be balanced very carefully, because you can't ask for everything. Because at that point, they will decide, no, I'm going to do the thing that does not require me to do those things. That will be cheaper for me in the long run. So, and then transit. I mentioned transit before. It is inter-community transit, getting from the CK campus to the hospital, and knowing that if I go to a bus station, there's going to be a bus coming there every 20 minutes. I don't have to plan my day around the bus. The bus is available. It can also get me from places like Silverdale to Central Kitsap. It can get me to Port Orchard. Anybody who's ever tried to get from North Kitsap to South Kitsap in our community, you are spending the whole day on the bus to be able to achieve that based upon a limited number of runs. Then we need to have connectivity to our activity centers, to park and rides and transfer centers. We need to ensure that we are putting in transit that isn't just the buses themselves, but also we are putting development around that transit infrastructure. The comprehensive plan includes a number of different chapters. I'm not going to go through them all, but again, the comprehensive plan is consistent with the Growth Management Act. The Growth Management Act asks you to balance 14 very different goals, many of which conflict with one another. But the comprehensive plan has to include certain elements, such as economic development, protection of the environment. We now have climate change, which I mentioned previously. Then you have parks, recreation, and open space. Where are people going to recreate, either in small community parks or large regional parks? Transportation, the roads and transit, and housing, affordable and market rate. This isn't just about how to provide funding for our vulnerable populations. It's how are we going to provide housing for everybody living in our community. These goals and policies all need to be balanced against one another. When you read through the plan, you're going to see words like ensure. A lot of things that make it sound like this absolutely must happen. What must happen is the county must do its best to balance all of the goals and policies against one another, to ensure that we are finding a balancing act between certain things like environmental protection and housing. We have very concentrated urban growth areas. We need to make sure that we are still protecting the environment inside the urban growth area, but we can't do so at the expense of being able to put in housing that can be affordable, if housing at all. It is that delicate balance that this plan attempts to do. I will say that balance is in the eye of the beholder. Everyone has a different viewpoint on what that may be, depending on your perspective. These are the other tables I threatened earlier, the first of which is the population target. What you'll note here is that we're planning for 6,000 more people than our population allocation. Again, that was because we had to almost quadruple the number of multifamily housing units without grossly affecting our urban growth area boundaries. What you'll note here is a majority of that housing is going into the Silverdale area. And the Central Kitsap area are the places that are receiving the most. And thus, when you see red numbers, that means we're over. We're over in capacity for those urban growth areas. Again, that is to facilitate housing, which are two GMA competing priorities that we're going to see exactly how it plays out, as we will be the first jurisdictions to go through with the new commerce guidance, which does lead jurisdictions like ours to having the challenge of meeting our population allocations and our commerce-directed housing allocations at the same time. Fortunately for employment, we're substantially closer. We have a minor shortfall of about 146 employees. In the planning world, that's pretty close to the pin. We don't want to end up knocking on every door saying, hey, can you take a couple more employees? 146 is an excellent place to be. Also, we've been able to, through our minimal urban growth area expansions, provide industrial employment focused in existing industrial areas. Historically, we've tried to spread the industrial countywide. Industrial usually needs to be around other industrial, close to key highways and other types of infrastructure. You're going to note from this that we have oversupplied the Bremerton urban growth areas. What are those? That's not the city of Bremerton. That is the West Bremerton Urban Growth Area, the areas off Werner Road, and the Puget Sound Industrial Center, Bremerton, around the airport. Those are the places with our industrial uses. Industrial uses need to feed off of one another, and our plan is focusing that over the next 20 years. We've also increased the diversity of our community. Kitsap, I know this is going to be a shock, is historically Caucasian. That has been changing in recent years. Tables that you see here note that our non-Caucasian population has increased by about 5%, largely in the areas of our Hispanic community as well as our African-American community, and we do expect this to change over time. Kitsap County has a strong diversity, equity, and inclusion program inside the county itself that's currently working on its internal operations, but again, ensuring that we are providing opportunities for all is particularly important. Housing is a huge component of that. One thing that we do have in Kitsap County is we do not have pockets of particular ethnicities or racial groups. There aren't communities like you see in Seattle and the other side of the water. Our racial and ethnic groups are spread across our urban growth area boundaries. A little bit more in Silverdale, a little bit more in West Bremerton, but again, not huge differences. So when we're talking about the increases of opportunities to housing, to services, we are talking about needing to focus on the entirety of our urban growth areas, not just individual pockets and neighborhoods. That is very different than how other jurisdictions are required to do it, and it in many ways can be more challenging, but does show that we do have a good distribution of our growing ethnic and racial community. So I'm wrapping up. Tonight's the Planning Commission hearing, if you hadn't heard. And then after that, there is not hearing examiner hearings. The hearing examiner is not involved in this whatsoever. This is a hearing before the Board of County Commissioners. I've changed that 3 times, and I keep using the wrong one. Pardon me. Yes. October 28th is when the commissioner hearing will be. So what the Planning Commission will be doing here tonight is hearing from these fine folks in the room and on Zoom about their feelings about the draft documents. The Planning Commission will then be making recommendations to the Board of County Commissioners that will hopefully come out in the middle of October. Those recommendations will then receive a Board of Commissioners hearing on October 28th. That is the opportunity to talk to the final decision makers on the comprehensive plan documents. After the 28th, the board will then be deliberating on the Planning Commission recommendation, making adds, edits, changes as they feel is appropriate based upon public comment, and the idea is that we will conclude on December 2nd of 2024. So with that, I am going to conclude. That was a lot longer than I anticipated. Unfortunately for you, I got my second wind. Any questions? Thank you for your time.
The next portion of the hearing is public participation. We'll start with the people in the room. Do we have a sign-up list?
We do. And first on the list, we've got David Onstad.
Thank you, commissioners. I'm David Onstad. I live in Port Orchard. For the past 15 months, I have warned the leaders of the county about DCD's disregard for best available science. Perhaps my expertise as an ecologist and expert in scientific literature was easy to ignore. Now we have evidence, however, directly and clearly from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, that DCD is disregarding, avoiding, and ignoring best available science concerning impacts to the environment. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife concerns are listed at the very end of the set of public comments in the matrix of comments and responses on the comp plan website. They're numbers 520 to 526. Here, I'm going to quote them, so bear with me. With regard to alternative 2, the department states, even this alternative falls short of fully meeting the agency's recommendations, unquote. They also state, quote, we have concerns with this alternative due to the expected impact on 1,477 linear feet of non-fish-bearing streams no expansion of stream buffer widths, and the increase in fragmented habitat, unquote. In comment 525, the department says, our management recommendation for the full riparian function can be achieved using the site potential tree height at age 200. We urge Kitsap County to consider adopting this method for delineating riparian management zones to prevent any further loss of functions and values in these ecologically important and vulnerable priority habitats. This approach can also help to increase water and air quality, unquote. In comment 526, I'm quoting, the department underscores that counties and cities shall include the best available science in developing policies and development regulations. They further note, we encourage Kitsap County to follow these recommendations more closely as the county continues to develop and revise its environmental impact statement, comprehensive plan, and critical areas ordinance. When departures from the best available science are made in policies and development regulations, scientifically based reasoned justifications must be provided in the record. Wow. The best response from the DCD to these comments at the very end of the matrix was to claim that their approach to the environmental impact statement was, and I quote, conservative with regard to protection of critical areas. This DCD response is, one, too vague, one word, basically, two, incorrect, and three, does not meet the requirement that scientific explanations be included when best available science is disregarded, according to the rules that they should follow. One obvious example of this type of effort by DCD is the failure to consider the science developed by the Department of Ecology, indicating that urban and rural streams and wetlands should have the same buffer sizes. So logically and scientifically, we should not differentiate between urban and rural streams. That's not my quote. That's just me. I've included supplementary information in my handout. Please do not let DCD disregard science. Avoidance will lead to significant harm to our environment and possibly lead to lawsuits that are costly for everyone. Thank you.
Do we have his handout?
I do have copies, yes. Next, we've got Mark Isis.
Mark Isis, MAP Limited, Silverdale. Is where my business is, and I live in Paulsbo. While I'd like to take some time and debate Eric Baker's philosophy, I only get 3 minutes, so I'm just going to move into some detail. Tree canopy ordinance, I think they've done a good job on it, but if our goal is to try and keep existing trees, we need to up the number of credits that each one gets, because a 24-inch tree, based on the drip line, you get 3.5 credits. If I tear the tree out, and I put in replacement trees, 6-footers, I can get 19 credits. So it seems like there should be a bigger, if you're trying to keep bigger trees, then that would be the way to do it, to change that. Also having to have 50% of the trees in a separate tract, that means you have to do a subdivision. Most multifamilies don't do subdivisions, so it's counterintuitive. Section 17450.020 requires 16-foot minimum on zero lot line, which makes no sense to me since I've lived in a 12-foot single-wide mobile home, and it was adequate. So if you could shrink down the size of the townhouse, it makes more sense. The max lot size in the urban area is 9,000 square feet, and this was amended back in the last comp plan as a reasonable measure, and it's because they want to have the urban low subdivided. The problem is that since the Growth Management Act came into existence, sewer is supposed to have been extended by the county out into all of their urban growth areas. They're supposed to service these areas with sewer, and they have not done it. So when you have a 9,000 square foot max, you can't subdivide. So these people have been sitting on these lots that can't be subdivided, can't do anything, and they need to put an additional comment in there that if sewer is not available within 200 feet, then they can build their single-family house on that lot. I don't understand why we're removing indoor storage from regional commercial when we're pushing all the density into the regional commercial area, and he talks about not having to get in your car to go places. The building site definition Now it says that it's defined as only one lot, when previously it was defined as one or more lots or two lots. And since you have so many existing lots, I think you need to go back to the original definition, because you can aggregate lots. The building site definition, I just don't see it needing to change. And then on parking requirements, they've changed the numbers, but they could also change the scale. In the Old Town Silverdale, 18 foot's your maximum access width in your parking lots. In the code, it's 24 feet. So I think you could shrink that down to 20. And if you shrunk your parking stalls to 18 and count the 2 foot overhang on your curbs, then you could have more room for your street trees, for your tree canopy. And I guess I'm out of time.
Thank you. Next, we have Ian Harkins.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Ian Harkins, and I'm here on behalf of the Kitsap Building Association. Right now, during this hearing, the public is being asked to speak on new tree canopy regulations, new development regulations, new boundary line adjustment regulations, draft CPACER incentives, various zoning changes, and several complex housing analyses done by county consultants. Running parallel to all of this right now is our new and updated critical area ordinance, which arguably has a greater impact on housing affordability than any of these other changes being made that I just mentioned. All of this is to say that housing is already getting more unaffordable year over year as it is, but the county is now adding an encyclopedia's worth of new regulations on proposed development in a time where we should be actively looking for ways to cut red tape to help with affordability. With that being said, what is before you today and what is being asked of future applicants and builders alike is simply too much at one time. There are way too many changes in the code, in zoning, and in the permit review processing happening at once. Builders, and by extension DCD staff, will simply be unable to comply with all of the proposed changes in the time frame they're being asked to. The DCD is undergoing an entire process change without a director or an assistant director, while also enduring severe staff turnover. DCD staff and builders are being asked to track, comprehend, and apply dozens of new code changes and new code additions with almost no lead time. We advocate strongly for the tree canopy code in particular to be delayed. This is a fairly rushed code development that deserves its own public process and further stakeholder engagement. The county is also under no obligation at all to adopt a tree canopy code right now. It should wait until 2025, given how many other updates and new regulations are coming on January 1st. The DCD already has its hands full with the Lattimore, which has newly been named the PREP process, not to mention the fact that they have to comply with Senate Bill 5290 starting January 1st, 2025. You, as a planning commission, the KBA highly recommends you recommend to the board that they push adoption of the proposed tree canopy regulations for its own public process next year. It should be separate from the comp plan, and it deserves its own attention and hearing. So, thank you.
Thank you. Next, we've got Bernie Kenworthy.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Bernie Kenworthy. I'm an engineer in the county. I've been working here for the past 25 years. I've been updated in many comp plan processes. I've been involved in many comp plan processes over the years, and I've been following this one very closely. I'm here tonight to request that push a new portion of the code that has been included in the past month be pulled and included in a separate process, and that is we've been notified about 3 weeks ago of a boundary line adjustment change in the code. And while I think that some of those changes are well-intentioned, the unintended consequences are great. And This code change was not something that's been included in any of the previous drafts over the past 2 years, and it also did not include any engagement with local surveyors, and they're the ones who are the experts in boundary law. I highly recommend that given that boundary law can impact not only neighbors and how they resolve boundary line disputes, this kind of language could lead to issues related to title, to transaction, to real estate transactions, and so I've alerted some of the local surveyors, and some of them are here tonight to give you their thoughts, but I really strongly encourage you to pull this language that we have not had the time to thoroughly vet and create a separate process that includes engagement with local experts in this area. Right now, I could come up with many different scenarios where this code is going to create more problems than it's trying to solve. In fact, I'm pretty unclear what is trying to be solved, so I really believe that this needs to be pulled and looked at more carefully. So that is my request. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Gary Chapman.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm Gary Chapman. I'm a professional land surveyor here in Kitsap County. Silverdale is my place of business. I'm just here to echo the same sentiments as Bernie brought to you. The code, as it's written, is really going to create a lot of havoc. It's addressing, in particular, easements and vacated right-of-ways as if they're boundaries. They're not boundaries. They have nothing to do with property ownership. It seems to me that this ordinance or draft, as it was written, is really rushed into place. It was only notified here the last couple of weeks. Whoever prepared that really doesn't have a thorough understanding of property boundaries, property issues, and how to deal with easements and deal with right-of-ways. They have nothing to do with boundaries. And so, like Bernie said, I think we should pull this aside, let us all vet this, because it's going to create an issue where people are not allowed to do boundary line adjustments. As an example, I have actually personally prepared a boundary line adjustment dealing with open space that was encroached, and part of that boundary line adjustment, as written, is not allowed. We were able to move the boundary line adjustment around to preserve the open space area in areas that were not encroached upon. I prepared all that work for DCD staff members who own the property. So as it sits now, there would be no resolution, no way to resolve that. So it's got to be rewritten. We got to take a look at it and have professionals help involved with the writing of that process. So please remove it. Thank you.
We've got Kevin Biggs next.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Kevin Biggs. I'm a surveyor with Northwest Surveying out of Bremerton, Washington. And I am joining with Bernie as well to ask you to defer making any changes on Title 1605050G. Having reviewed those proposed changes, I come up with the same conclusion as my colleagues, that it will do nothing but cause confusion in the industry while trying to put limits on the boundary line adjustment. It will put undue burden on the DCD staff, as well as prevent landowners from doing what they have a right to do, and that is fix disputes in their boundary, which is the main purpose of a BLA. And others have said it better, so I just join with them and ask you to please postpone making any decision on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we've got Kane Fenner.
Hi, good evening. My name is Kane Fenner. I live in Silverdale, work with Zaxium. We have properties we manage and build on in North and Central and South Kitsap. And I want to echo the sentiments of the previous speakers who have acknowledged that more regulation never reduces cost, almost never. And let's keep in mind that the locations that have been built are the easy locations. The ones that remain are the expensive locations to build. So when we layer on more costs for the infrastructure, for the vertical structure, we're doing so on sites that are the difficult sites in Kitsap to build. So we talk about building for a range of incomes, and I would advocate that, using my daughter as an example, when she got her first car just recently, we didn't get her a new car, we got her a used car. And it doesn't look especially wonderful, but it gets her from A to B. And we should apply this philosophy, I would say, to housing and expect that those at the lower end of the income bracket are not going to be the ones we're building new housing for. We should expect to build new housing for those who can afford the price points at which they can be delivered for a profit to the upper and middle incomes. And as those move into those housing, the housing that they move from is where the lower income people will move, just like my lower income daughter moved into, but not moved into, but acquired a used car and not a new one. So I would offer that as one thought. I would say to consider, as we look at all these regulations, which are admirable and noble, they want to achieve good causes. We want green spaces. We want to preserve the environment. We want to have energy efficient places. But of course, we want to do so in a way that our children, our 30-year-olds, our 40-year-olds, can move out of our basements and afford to live in housing of their own, set up their own households. And we just have to be realistic with what regulations we can afford. So I would offer that housing affordability is achieved through regulation reduction that enables the market to build more. Thanks very much.
Lyle Muller.
My name is Reed Muller. I'm a licensed land surveyor. Been surveying in Kitsap County for 68 years. Obviously, the boundary line adjustment ordinance has gone for 68 years without having any regulations. The legal community, the surveying community, has been able to manage taking care of what the people needs without the bureaucracy being involved in the process. You leave the people with the ability to either go to court, which is going to clog the legal system, or to not do the projects that they need to accomplish to get clear title on their properties. After 10 years, the people already own the property. They just don't have clear title to it. And if they go to sell, they now have the cloud on their property for on sale and also the adjoining property that is affected. Boundary line adjustment, you cannot create any lots over the, above what the lots that are involved in a boundary line adjustment. It's impossible. It takes two adjoining or two separate owners and two separate ownerships to do a boundary line adjustment. Anything else is nothing more than a what's called a the assessor calls that the assessor calls a tax. They're asking for a tax reconfiguration. So I go along with the rest is if we can pull this out of the comp plan and sit down with the staff and go through. And so if we're going to have one, let's have one that works for the community, and not just for the staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Goldberg.
Good evening. My name is Mark Goldberg. I'm from Seattle. By the way, I've been working in Kitsap County for 45 years. Did a first project here in 1979 in Bremerton, so I'm no stranger to Kitsap County. I'm here to ask for a piece of property to be included in the UGA. It's out on McCormick Drive, and I've brought a map here and an aerial photo so you can see exactly where I'm talking about. So this is a 10-acre parcel right now. It's zoned. It's called rural. This is not rural. It's surrounded by subdivisions up and down. In fact, I was just out there earlier today, and it goes probably a half mile to the north and several mile and a half to the south. And in your comp plan, you mentioned several times the need for middle-income housing, townhouses, row houses, and create density, and that's exactly what I'd like to do. I want this, I'm asking for this property to be included in the UGA. There's absolutely no reason it's not in the UGA. It has water and sewer right on the edge of the property. Now, your comp plan mentioned several times the need for that middle-income housing. That's what we'd like to create there. So, I've been asked to present a development agreement to the county, which is very specific, and didn't have enough time to really produce one because it's very expensive and very time-consuming to do that. So right now, the property is zoned urban low. The property should be zoned 10 to 30 units an acre so it can create the density. And I'm sure you're all aware there's a housing crisis in America, which is real serious. We need to create a lot of housing, as much as we can, everywhere. And as previously mentioned by other people, you know, the regulations are stifling a lot of that. So, you know, I've been here doing this for decades, know exactly how to do it. And I'm asking you to have this piece of property included into the UGA with new zoning. Thank you.
Sir, what is the address of this piece of property?
It's called Lot 2 McCormick Drive. And as you go up McCormick Drive to the north, when all the subdivisions end, there's a holding pond on the east side of the street. And above that, there's a playground. And then there's just all the new lots have been developed by Century Properties or just to the north, and there's lots of houses going in. There's just a lot of them. And it's an island. There's a 10-acre island. I mean, it's really 7 acres. There's a ravine on the western boundary that's a deep, deep ravine. It's beautifully treed. It's just a lovely setting, but we shouldn't have an island in the middle of all this development. Thank you again.
Okay, that's the end of our list here. I'm not sure if there's anyone else in the room that didn't get a chance to testify that would like to. Doesn't look like it. We'll move to online next. I just wanted to make sure that there was no one else in the room. So
next is online?
Yes. So the first speaker I see is got a list name of Mike. So I'm going to go ahead and pull you over, Mike.
Hi, can you hear me? My name is Michael Korsnes. I'm Gen X, so it takes a little while to learn how to use these things nowadays. So my name is Michael Korsnes, and I live off of Northwest Anderson Hill Road, right by where they just received a notification that they're doing an S48 LLC project, which is supposed to bring 438 apartments to the intersection right down our block. First off, I just want to say I am not opposed to new housing. We need it. However, the communities here, our collaborative communities, have gotten together and since before 2020 have tried to improve the structure of Northwest Anderson Hill Road. There's been multiple accidents, hit and runs. It's just not a safe environment. I want to thank the Kitsap Central Kitsap School District because they acknowledged this and they actually moved 4 bus stops off of the road. But for some reason, every time there seems to be a project, Northwest Anderson Hill Road gets ignored. In 2023, Public Works said that they were going to have a corridor safety study conducted. And it is now 2024, and they don't have any money for it. And the grant that they had was not approved. In 2016, there was a design report that was designed for that intersection that was there. And the housing that they put in between the time that they built the intersection and the time that the report was designed in 2016 didn't support Northwest Anderson Hill then. So my concerns right now are that they're adding more traffic to the road they have a plan in place, not a plan, but they have a application in place before they even have taken the time to be able to conduct a corridor safety study to make sure the resources needed to support that infrastructure is in place. Notably, I received the traffic impact analysis today, and I was looking at it, and it addresses so many different places, even 4 miles away at the entrance to the Navy base. However, it doesn't address right around the corner, which is less than a quarter mile of where the issues are, all the way from Central Kitsap High School to the middle school, all the way up to Apex Hill Road. And if any of you have not traveled along the roundabout at Lower Northwest Anderson Hill Road around the time school districts exit and you know school starts and closes, I invite you to spend an hour or two sitting there in traffic. Thanks for your time. I only have 9 seconds left, and have a great evening.
Thank you. Next, we've got Edward Coviello from Kitsap Transit. Okay, Ed, I think you should be able to unmute.
Okay, I'm Ed Coviello with Kitsap Transit. I'm a planner with them. One of the things I noticed in the impact fee table was that for park-and-ride facilities, specifically park-and-ride lot with bus or light rail service, that there's an impact fee of $2,500 per parking space. At Kitsap Transit, we feel this goes against the goals of the comprehensive plan and the policies. And we'd like the staff and or commission to reconsider this $2,500 fee and work with us to find some type of adjustment. Thank you.
Okay, next we've got Beth Nichols and Doug Heyman.
Thank you, Commissioners. This is Doug Heyman, who's going to speak first, and then Beth Nichols will speak for another three. Commissioners, one of our directives as a county, as mandated by the Growth Management Act, is to provide housing for all ranges of income. We're currently failing to meet that goal. The number of high-end single-family homes is way out of range for the middle and lower income tiers. And yet those are the kinds of developments that continue to be approved and then built. In creating this new comprehensive plan, we need tangible strategies for just how we'll provide adequate housing for middle and lower income groups in Kitsap County. This won't be accomplished by expanding into rural areas to build more single-family homes that are unaffordable. Deregulation doesn't improve the conditions for all. The myth of the rising tide lifting all boats is merely voodoo economics. And I'd ask the commissioners, please do what you can to show leadership that meets this missing middle and lower income housing needs for our citizens. Thank you.
And then Beth Nichols, were you going to speak next, Beth?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I am Beth Nichols from Indianola. As we look at the county comp plan, maintaining the health of the earth on which our existence depends must take precedence, and we should treat nature as the foundation of life itself, not simply as an asset for humans to use. Give high priority to the protection and regeneration of our ecosystems for the well-being of current and future generations of all Kitsap inhabitants, including wildlife. Environmental conditions are changing more rapidly and unpredictably than in the past, and we need to give more explicit attention to climate change and its impact on the county's development. One of the most powerful ways we can create more livable communities, lessen the impacts of climate change, benefit the environment, and contribute to the well-being of the human community is to keep and increase our tree canopy. Trees are so valuable, and we need to protect them. The proposed tree canopy regulations in the comprehensive plan are unfortunately quite weak, but they are a small start. We would hope for stronger language about retaining trees, and that Kitsap County strengthen its protections for our remaining large trees and forests. Trees bring innumerable benefits to a community. One would hope that developers begin to recognize this and plan around them when building. The county can help by strongly incentivizing tree retention. Here are some valuable tree benefits. They remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. They shade homes and offices. They reduce air pollutants, ozone, and auto emissions. They reduce topsoil erosion and prevent pollutants contained in the soil from getting into our waterways. Trees help create a feeling of well-being. They reduce noise pollution by buffering and absorbing as much as 50% of urban noise. They are habitat for wildlife. As many as 100 different life forms can be found on one tree. Trees are beautiful. Neighborhoods with large trees draw people to them. People want to live there. Let's start recognizing the value of trees and keep our tree canopy plan, tree canopy protections in the comp plan and actually strengthen them. Thank you.
We've got Ron Perkowitz.
There, I think I'm unmuted. Thank you. Ron Perkowitz, Inspection and Permit Services. Past DCD director, also speaking for Kitsap Building Association. And I just want to talk quickly about section 17.490.030 on the parking requirements. It's good that they reduced the single family requirements from 3 to 2 and are only allowing the one of the enclosed garage or carport spaces to be counted. I think that if you really go through it, you'll find that a large consumption of land that's used in housing areas is for parking. So if you do allow the two stalls in a two-car garage to be counted, it would help reduce the on-street parking requirement. People do not store as much stuff in garages as they used to. We see that daily in our inspection of houses that are up for sale that are used in older houses. People are more concerned now about security and protecting their investments in their automobiles, so they are parking their cars in the garage, closing the door, and then they can get out and be secure. Plus, technically, if you've got a UV vehicle, you have to plug it in inside the garage, and you're not supposed to run the cord under the door. So any changes you could make into allowing additional counting of all garage spaces would be appreciated. The second thing is in the tree ordinance, it is way, way too early to be adopting the canopy regulations. We have what's called the WUI, I'm sure you've heard of it, the Wildland Urban Interface Code coming. Well, it will not affect many of the urban areas where the tree canopy regulations would come into place, but the two have a definite conflict in what they're trying to do in trying to preserve trees, but also to protect homes from wildfires. So I would concur with those that have said, let's delay the tree canopy ordinance till next year. Thank you.
Next, I've got David Overton.
Hi, Commissioner.
Sorry, David, let's try that again.
Hi, Commissioners. Good evening. Can you hear me?
We can. Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks for allowing public testimony tonight. A couple quick items. It would be very helpful if DCD could provide a link on their website to the changes in the boundary line adjustment ordinance. Kitsap County for years has had an excellent ordinance that allows for quick changes during closings of real estate transactions to correct errors. And I'd hate to lose that flexibility and go towards a more restrictive process rather than one that's very flexible that professionals can use. Additionally, I'd like to thank you for including one of our rezones on industrial land, and this was down by the Port of Bremerton. It's surrounded by a gravel pit, the rail line that serves Puget Sound Naval Shipyard, as well as Highway 3 and the Port of Bremerton. It's an area that's dominated by industrial development, and we think this is a good inclusion, so thank you for supporting jobs in the area. And lastly, I'd like to say that I would recommend deferring the tree ordinance and the boundary line adjustment to the year of the rural, as they do affect areas that are urbanizing over time, specifically the boundary line adjustment. It would be hard to have that change happen before we look at the rezones in the rural areas. And kudos to staff. It's hard to appease everyone, and I know you're getting a lot of public testimony from a lot of folks that are coming into this late, and it's a monumental task going forward to do this all in just a year or two. So thanks for the hard work that you put in, and please consider deferring a few of these elements to next year. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got Beverly Parsons next.
Thank you. I'm Beverly Parsons from Hansville. I would like to request that you add two brief sections to the introduction that are related to the future use of the comp plan. Plans such as this too often end up on a shelf and not used in important decision making. The first section that I would like to see would be one that's labeled something like use of revised mission and vision. I've mentioned before to you that I think it is such an important change, the change in mission and vision that's given in the comp plan. And so I think it'd be important to have a section in the introduction that addresses this. Some of the things it might say would be, it is the responsibility of all Kitsap County government officials, staff, and advisors to make decisions based on the comprehensive plan revised Kitsap County mission and vision. The revised mission now includes responsiveness as a key responsibility of Kitsap County government. The vision is that of a county becoming a community, an interconnected group of people that are engaged, connected, safe, healthy, and livable, and so on, as a result of implementing this comp plan. Thus, when county government officials, staff, and advisors make decisions, the focus is not on simply balancing the interest of one group or element with another. Rather, it is on focusing all parties on the county, in the county, becoming a true community. And we have some examples that we'll submit as well. The second section I'd like to see is one that's labeled something like continued public participation. Too often plans like this are put on the shelf or ignored, and there's really not continued engagement with the public. So I'd like to see a section that reads something like this. To help the county become a community as stated in the county vision, continued vision-focused public participation is needed during implementation of the comprehensive plan. County government officials, staff, and advisors are expected to gain and use the skills and knowledge necessary to implement the comprehensive plan in a way that is holistically supportive of the vision. They bring widely diverse groups of people in the county together to seek to understand and strategize for the bigger picture. It's not a few groups here and there pushing their own agenda. It would involve respectful facilitation of diverse residents who work together to create the desired type of community. We'll submit additional information in writing. Thank you for considering these suggestions.
Thank you. Next, we've got Carol Price.
I wasn't quite ready. I have a few points. I'll try to make it quick. I just would like to say that low-income folks are not without resources. You can have property and own a home and still be low-income. That means that if I want to sell my house and move somewhere else in Kitsap County, I should be able to. I kind of take offense with Kane Finner. And his point. Folks like me perhaps need to move into urban areas. Perhaps you have children and you need to be closer to services, or you're an elder like myself and you need to move in closer to services. We need access to housing like cottages or condos that we could buy. Maybe we don't want to rent. Maybe we can't afford to rent. The rents are just horrendous. And this, so I hope that builders will hear me. We also need communities that are bikeable and walkable. It's extremely important for Silverdale and Paulsbow and Bremerton to have transport lanes so that we can get around the town. The towns easily and get to grocery stores without a car. I would also like to say just respectfully to the builders and the developers in the county that you have a responsibility. Yes, we need housing. We need the development, but you also have a responsibility to the community and to the county and to the land. It's not just about making money, and it's not just about housing. And finally, I'd like to fully support what David Onstad has said about best available science, what Beth said about tree canopies, what Doug said about housing, and especially what Beverly said about the comp plan in general. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Martha Burke.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. My name is Martha Burke. I live in Suquamish. I did submit some comments in writing, which relate to some of the comments you just heard from Carol Price about the need for community. I also have a couple of other things I wanted to say more specifically related to the parks portion of the comp plan. The parks and open space in Kitsap County is funded by Kitsap residents for their benefit. It should not be the purpose nor the function of our parks to serve the needs of tourists. For this reason, I think policies 1.8 and 1.9 in that chapter should be removed, as well as strategy 1.D. Kitsap is not some theme park to be developed and enhanced for the benefit of private developers. We don't need parks to be designed and maintained to become destination facilities. Also, in regards to strategy 1.E, the Port Gamble framework has never been approved, nor should it be before a complete environmental assessment is done or of its natural characteristics, including all wetlands and wildlife habitats. This is a requirement, and it's consistent with the existing PROS plan. It's not just an enhancement. The reference to the Port Gamble Heritage Park framework should be removed. And so I have one other comment. I'm with the Kitsap Environmental Coalition. We submitted extensive comments on the draft EIS, and for some reason, those were completely eliminated, although we submitted them in time. So we've been assured by Eric that they will be addressed, and there will be a separate addendum to the comp plan to address specifically those comments. So I just want to make sure that that indeed does happen. I think that's all. So thank you very much for being able to comment. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is everyone on the list.
Is there any, are there any other comments? Are there any comments of general nature, not necessarily on the comp plan? Are there any comments for the good of the order?
So we'll want to formally close the public hearing portion for this.
Hearing no further comments from the public, we will close the public comment portion of the comp plan update.
Thank you.
Once now again, any other comments, any other business before the committee? Hearing none, this meeting of the Planning Commission is closed.
Thank you, everyone.
And we beat 7 o'clock.